Welcome to the Pint Glass Football Podcast.
This is Pint Glass Football. We talk NFL and college football. PintGlassFootball.com is the website. Subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. I'm your host, Brad Fowler. What's up, PGF Nation? Today, we're going to recap the NFL divisional round games with our biggest takeaways. Then on Thursday, we're going to have another episode for you guys. We're going to preview the AFC and NFC championship games, make predictions and betting picks for those. But joining me to break it all down, my co-host, Alex Higdon. Alex, what is going on?
Hey, Brad, what an incredible weekend of playoff football. I mean, if the season isn't enough, as big-time matchups during certain weeks isn't enough, what we got this weekend was everything that we wanted, specifically from some teams we're going to talk about once we start to get into it.
We've got some awesome storylines going into Championship Sunday. Obviously, like I said, we'll break that down here in a few days, but I can't wait to talk about these games and break it down with you. Before we do that real quick, though, we've got a little bit of coaching news that we want to jump into. The Raiders decide that Antonio Pierce is going to become the full-time head coach. Obviously, that news kind of broke in between episodes, so we didn't really get a chance to address this. Being the Raiders fan that you are and seeing what he did this year in that role, now becoming officially the head coach, what are your takeaways on this move? Do you like this move? How do you feel about them moving forward with him as the head coach?
I mean, hey, after coming off what we had with Rich Bisaccia from 2 years ago and the turnaround he did and then turning, you know, ownership, looking in another direction and going once again, the quote unquote rock star selection with Josh McDaniels, I think the players and the organization need to be settled a little bit. This is a guy that's entrenched within the Raider community, coming from Compton. So he was there with the original LA Raiders. So he's connected through that. We know how much the Davises like the traditional route. So he's connected in that way. Plus, we also had our best player, Max Crosby, say he'd really have to consider what his future is if we didn't hire him. So it was kind of a foregone conclusion that he was going to get hired. We know they had to go through the process, so to speak. But the job was really his. As a Raider fan, I think, for the first time, and I can't believe I'm about to say this, I feel comfortable about the way our defensive staff is set up. This is really truly about what he does on offense. We know he's bringing in Marvin Lewis to help him do some of the head coaching things, the CEO things that he's going to need to do. But this is really going to come down to who you bring in at OC, not even who you bring in at quarterback. A lot of backup quarterbacks were very successful. So who you bring in as OC, we've heard Cliff Kingsbury, who I'm absolutely 1,000% against. But however, they did interview the Rams passing game coordinator and Zach Robinson, and then Clint Kubiak from the Niners. He is also on the list, which is the son of Gary Kubiak, for those of us who know, from the famed Denver coach who won the Super Bowl for Peyton Manning. So hopefully we get the OC right, and then, you know, it's off to the races for the next 3 to 4 years, however long his contract is, and then we can go from there. And then also figuring out, locking in on Champ Kelly. That's who I really want as GM. So the biggest piece, I guess, in place is the head coach, and then there's other things you have to look at around that to fill out the rest of the staff.
I love what I saw from him the second half of the year when he took over and the shift in the response that we saw from these players. I think he brings a winning attitude, a winning culture that he's trying to install with this team. Because he came from one, right? He was a winning Super Bowl captain of a Super Bowl team with the New York Giants, played for a great coach in Tom Coughlin. He knows what a championship team looks like, and he knows what that locker room should feel like. And I think his players kind of gravitate towards that. So I think there's a lot to like here. Yes, there's a lack of experience, and I think you hit it on the head. Those coordinator positions are going to be key because I think it's safe to say he's going to be more of a CEO type of coach in a culture builder. But we've seen this formula succeed in the NFL. Look at some of the teams right now in this final four, if you will. Two of them that really stand out to me with what Dan Campbell's done in Detroit, being a CEO coach, hitting home runs at his coordinator positions, building a culture and an identity. He's done a great job turning that team around. And you look at what Harbaugh's done for years with the Baltimore Ravens, being once again a CEO coach, always making great coordinator hires, but having a culture and an identity that is what they believe in, a philosophy they believe in. Antonio Pierce just feels like an old school Raider guy to me. And I think there's something appealing to that too, because we've seen the Raiders have a lack of success, especially the last 20 years or so. And so to the younger generation, they might not realize that this team has a rich history of winning. And this team does have a rich history of success and a Raider way, so to speak. And they've kind of lost their way these last couple decades. But I think a guy like this can maybe rebuild some of that culture and identity. And I think that's what Mr. Davis liked the most about him. And I think that's what he sees when he sees Antonio Pierce. So on paper, I think it could be a really good hire. I'm excited to kind of see the next chapter of the Raiders with him calling the shots. Alex, as we're sitting here recording, news just broke right now. The Tennessee Titans are going to hire Bengals offensive coordinator Brian Callahan as their next coach. This is a report that just dropped here from Yahoo Sports. This is an interesting hire here because this is a guy who's had some success with that Bengals offense. He's shown some creativity. I like some of the play calling I've seen from him. Interesting fit, though, for a Titans team that's clearly in transition here. Any initial thoughts on this hire?
Yeah, I think this is a solid hire. I mean, you know, when you start coming from the Sean McVay tree or you're coming from the Shanahan tree, these current coaches that we're, iteration of coaches that we're looking at right now, are the ones that are being innovative on the offensive side. The Titans have a guy that for a quarterback that we were not high on, but did have a lot of flashes going into the season in terms, he played the season in Will Levis. So you bring over an offensive guy with those weapons in Trey Burks, with the weapon that you also have in DeAndre Hopkins, you'll probably lose Derrick Henry, but you bring an offensive guy that can help develop him. And perhaps you have found a huge building block, something that the Titans have been missing since what we want to say, maybe Steve McNair. So something they've been missing for a very long time that they can feel confident about to help develop and let's say move forward in this new with Rand Carthon and the new generation of the Titans.
Yeah, that's interesting because like you said, that Shanahan tree, right? And that Shanahan style of offense, the McVay offense, LaFleur, so many different guys now kind of running variations of this offense. We have to remember that Will Levis ran a Shanahan style offense at Kentucky. And so this is a pretty good hire from that standpoint, bringing in a guy who's going to run a system that he's pretty familiar with and is comfortable with a lot of the concepts in this type of system, and an offensive guy, a young, innovative guy to work with your young quarterback who, like you said, Alex, flashed some talent and really showed us some things this year. Had some rookie moments, of course, but I think showed Titans fans that the future might be bright with Will Levis under center. And now you get a guy that can kind of help shape and mold this offense around him. So definitely an interesting hire and on paper, looks like a pretty good hire.
Absolutely. I mean, and there'll be plenty of time for us to dig in there. Obviously, the Bears hired Shane Waldron as their OC, and the Panthers hired one of their former players and Dan Morgan as their GM. So we'll have plenty of time to go into it further as we get closer to the offseason.
We've got games to talk about, Alex, because this divisional round was awesome. And it starts with an instant classic. Kansas City Chiefs get past the Bills again. Man, devastating loss to the Buffalo Bills. I think watching this game, Alex, now a lot to get into here, but I think both teams made a ton of mistakes in this game. I mean, the fake punt, WTF, what was that? And then for Andy Reid, a guy who usually doesn't make a lot of curious coaching decisions, Mecole Hardman, why are you giving him the ball down there? I mean... That didn't make a whole lot of sense. There was just a lot of times in this game where I'm looking back forth going, what are these teams doing here? Just as great as this game was, there was a lot of questionable decisions. But Buffalo, I mean, in the first half, only up 4 going into halftime. And what really stood out to me was they had double the time of possession, double the number of first downs, 235 yards. They only led 17-13, that Chiefs defense gave up 124 yards on the ground in the first half. Just to put that in perspective, since 1991, there have been 20 teams that allowed at least 124 rushing yards in the first half of a postseason game. All 20 lost the game. That they had really outplayed Kansas City, and they found a way to let them hang around, and you just can't do that with this Chiefs team.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it looked like, you know, when at the end of the game, I think we were probably both thinking the same thing. Which WTF did we were probably fighting over either the fake punt or the Hardman at the goal line thing. I don't know. And that's something that we're probably going to talk about in the offseason too, because I think we both believe, as we texted, that that rule is going to get changed going into the offseason. But, you know, this is really becoming very Peyton Manning, Tom Brady-esque in terms of Josh Allen, or rather the Buffalo Bills versus the Chiefs. They can't beat them. Seem to be kryptonite for Buffalo. You know, Stephon Diggs, for all the complaining and everything that he does, 3 for 21. If you're that guy, this is a game that you have to show up in. 3 for 21 isn't cutting it. I have not been able to dig into the tape to see how he was being covered. I know they kind of had a lot of bracket coverage around him, so they limited his spacing and minimized the space in terms of the windows that Josh Allen had to throw into. But I probably only saw that maybe about 3 plays. But for the most part, Josh Allen threw 40, basically 40 times, and Stephon Diggs only had 8 targets and only completed 3 of them. But it was really the true rushing attack of Buffalo, something that I have been complaining about, you know, Brad, you know, for a while, saying this is why they can't get ahead. They ran 39 times for 182 yards and 2 TDs, though a lot of it really from Josh Allen, but a nice mixture of Allen, Cook, and Ty Johnson. But I simply just don't know. It was just these critical mistakes. There was a critical throw that Josh Allen missed down the seam to Shakir, who was open in the end zone. Again, that's something I really want to try and go back and look at to really give a true breakdown of why that was so off. If it was just him, was there a lot of heavy pressure? Because the pocket looked clean enough for him to step up and make the throw, because that would have been a critical throw that would have won them the game. And then obviously the wide right with the kicker. I mean, there's not much you can do with that. You put yourself in position at least to tie, and there's that. But on the Kansas City side, I think once we saw them not the Mecole Hardman turnover into something, I think we all felt strongly that, yeah, you can't do that with Mahomes. You're going to have to make a decision. You're going to have to, you can't give him that opportunity, because they're going to turn one of these plays into something. They only allowed 7 points again in the entire second half, and they only scored in the third quarter. And after that, they shut out the Buffalo Bills. So I think a lot of kudos deserves to go to the Chiefs, but specifically Spagnuolo and that defense, which has been really the strong point of why Kansas City is in the position once again where they are now, while Patrick Mahomes winning his first playoff, we're getting his first playoff road win.
Yeah, Alex, I actually went back and watched the tape because we had texted about that last throw. From the reverse angle, I saw Chris Jones was actually hitting Josh Allen on that throw. So at first, I was a little critical too, because I'm like, man, he really missed that one. But then when I saw it again, it kind of explained, okay, he was getting hit right as he's releasing it. So I'm not going to put too much on Josh Allen for that one. It was just a great play by that Chiefs defense to put pressure on him. Otherwise, if he has a clean pocket there, he probably hits that throw 9 times out of 10. I liked what I saw from the Bills' game plan, and I thought they went away from it too much in the second half. They came out with a lot of 6 offensive linemen sets, just really took it to the Chiefs. I mean, they could not stop the run, whether it was James Cook or Josh Allen. And Josh Allen, I think overall, I think he played an awesome game. I mean, I really thought he played an awesome game. But to your point, I think his teammates let him down in some big spots. That Diggs drop on that 85-yard bomb, I mean, an absolute dime, hits him literally in both hands, unreal throw, drops it, would have been a touchdown. If you look at probably the 5 best throws in this game, Josh Allen probably threw 4 of them. I mean, he had some throws in this game. That one to the corner pylon for the touchdown was an absolute laser. I was super impressed. But once again, it felt like, especially in the second half, they kind of get away from the running game. The Chiefs just find a way to get it done. I mean, it's clear at this point, Alex, the Chiefs just have their number. Because I felt like even after this game, I still feel like the Bills are the more talented team. Kelce came to life, but I mean, where has he been all year? I mean, all of a sudden he looks like the Kelce of old when it matters most. And probably some of that has to do with the fact that the Bills are just so beat up at linebacker. I guess we kind of had to expect he'd have an impact in this game. His first touchdown in 8 weeks. I mean, he's been playing at basically a C minus all year long. Valdes-Scantling, he's been MIA all year. Has multiple huge catches in this game. These guys step up for this team at the biggest moments. They step up, even guys that really hadn't been delivering this year. They just seem to step up when it matters most. And for some reason, the Bills just don't. Even when there was big stretches in this game, they looked like the better team. Because I look at this Kansas City team, this is a flawed Kansas City team. I mean, they're a good team. They're solid. But this is not the team that we've seen the last couple of years that just looked like a heavy Super Bowl favorite. You got guys that, once again, didn't make plays most of the year, making huge plays. And I think it goes back to just the winning culture that Andy Reid has really built in KC. I mean, the Bills have had success against this team in the regular season, but for some reason, they just can't get it done in the playoffs. Now, I can't imagine the Bills actually firing McDermott, but maybe, you know, maybe the ownership, I wonder if they're going to look at this and think maybe it's time for a change here. I mean, even after being the two seed, winning the division for a fourth straight year, but underachieving in the playoffs again, I don't know, Alex, it might be time for them to move on.
Yeah, you know, Brad, we were talking about it yesterday, well, at least texting back and forth, that I thought in order for McDermott to keep his job, even though the turnaround was great, midseason firing, Ken Dorsey, Joe Brady calling the plays, them really tightening up and showing a lot of fortitude, getting into not only getting into the playoffs, but winning the division. Because remember, the Dolphins had this division, it looked like firm in hand, but they rushed back in, won critical games, and then won the most critical game for them to take and get this home game, because this is something that they needed. So now you got the home game, a la Peyton Manning finally getting one of those home games against the Patriots, where he did beat them, but you did get the home game here. But you finally got your arch nemesis in your building, on your turf, under your guys, and you could not close out. So I think, from my perspective, you have to kick the tires on a Jim Harbaugh. I mean, if you're Jim Harbaugh, you really should only be deciding between the Chargers and perhaps Atlanta. And if the Bills want to kick the tires with these two quarterbacks and Justin Herbert, as well as Josh Allen at the helm, this makes your job a lot easier, knowing that you have your young franchise guy here. You can really figure out a lot of the other things quite easily if you can, but who knows what direction Buffalo wants to go in, and time is of the essence when he's already done his second interviews with the Chargers as well as Atlanta.
49ers survive versus the Packers. Man, this ended up being a really exciting game. On paper, this was a big spread, a 10-point spread at kickoff. Fourth NFC title game appearance in the last 5 years for the San Francisco 49ers. It's not surprising that they're here again. They're the one seed in the NFC, really talented team. I think what is surprising is that the Packers made it so tough on them. I mean, they had a legit shot to win this game. The Packers absolutely dominated the first quarter, 111 yards to 22 for San Francisco. But the key was, after two long drives, the 49ers defense made red zone stops and forced field goals. 49ers scored a touchdown right after that big fourth down stop near the red zone. Brock Purdy hit George Kittle on a rollout. Really nice throw for 32-yard touchdown. I thought right then, Alex, that, okay, 49ers made some stops. Offense is moving now, and this is where they're going to start to pull away. But I got to give credit to the Packers. They played tough all the way to the end. Aaron Jones, man, he looked like Walter Payton out there. I mean, wow, that guy was unreal in this game. I mean, he killed them. And what we talked about this, Alex, off air, but the Packers just killed them with the same pin and pull run concept. I mean, just over and over again, they had no answers for that play. It was really shocking, especially after halftime. You would have expected some adjustments there. I mean, there were some huge special teams plays in this game. That blocked 48-yard field goal to half. That monster kick return for Green Bay that set up the easy touchdown. I mean, Green Bay actually outplayed them for much of the first half. What were some of your key takeaways here?
I mean, I think the key takeaway for me was the tush push on the fourth down. I mean, especially when it's a game you're playing with house money, Green Bay. You know, the money was heavy on the San Francisco side, so you got to come in and play loose and feel comfortable. And I just thought that was, there's an expression that they say, don't play with your food. I think Green Bay played with their food there. The pin and pull, as you alluded to earlier, had been working. They had not done anything they've been able to stop it once. And remember that, the pin and pull, because we're going to reference it again. And it's going to be something that we're going to have to talk about as San Francisco moves forward. But I just thought that was a terrible play. I thought that was another coach similar to what we spoke about with Mecole Hardman and then the DeBar Hamlin sneak punt, in terms of, like, I think you're overthinking it. You're trying to outsmart yourself. Just stay with what works. And to be honest with you, had the 49ers lost this game, Christian McCaffrey only had really 17 carries, well, really 15 carries going into the fourth quarter, and he was running at 6.7 yards a clip. And that I couldn't understand why he didn't get the ball more. Aaron Jones had only 18 carries for 108 yards at six yards a clip. Continue feeding what's working, and then work the pass in. You have a very young quarterback. This is a big space that they're in. The weather got bad. Why are you choosing to throw the ball? Go with, continue going what works well. I didn't understand from either side. Kudos to Kyle Shanahan from finally come. I believe it was something like 0-30. The same for Brock Purdy. He was 0-3 and comeback wins when they're not leading going into, when they're down going into the fourth quarter. So there was a lot that they were overcome as coach, as well as QB and team. So I think that bodes well for them going forward. But I just felt that the running game should have been featured more. As much as we talk about running backs in this day and age in the NFL, I felt that the running game could have played and should have played a bigger part in this game, and it didn't as much as I thought it should have.
Yeah, I absolutely hit it on the head. I think the Deebo Samuel's shoulder injury, I think, was big. You could tell he was going to be a big part of the game plan. As good of a play caller and as good of a play designer as Kyle Shanahan is, this is something he's struggled with, and that's adjusting in game. Because after Deebo goes out, they try running the ball with a backup wide receiver on a play that was clearly designed for Deebo. And the second I saw that, I thought, what are you doing here? Like, that's not Deebo Samuel. And it failed miserably, of course. You're absolutely right about McCaffrey. I mean, the guy was killing Green Bay on the ground. It's pouring down rain, which I think was clear. It was affecting Brock Purdy. He just looked a little bit off most of the game. Now, granted, the 49ers did have 5 drops in this game, so that doesn't help. But you hit it on the head, Alex. He calls 39 passes to McCaffrey's 17 rushes when he was averaging over 6, you know, like you said, over 6 yards most of the game. We talked about McCaffrey going into this game and how he could be a serious problem for this weak Packers run defense. And once again, he goes away from it too often. On the other side, Jordan Love made some really big time throws in this game, but he was a bit erratic at times. We saw that throughout this season. Now, I'm still high on him. Don't get me wrong. I think he's going to be a really good quarterback in this league. That last throw, though, man, that was a killer. You got to be smarter there and just throw it away. Keep the game alive. The bottom line, though, the growth that we've seen from Jordan Love from the start of the season to right now, Alex, I think it's unlike anything we've seen from a young NFL quarterback.
We did talk about how high we were on Jordan Love coming in. I think once Aaron Jones came and got over his hamstring, and then we got a glimpse of Christian Watson, how this offense was able to open up more. And while he was out, you saw the maturation of Romeo Doubs as well as Jaden Reed. The one thing I will say, in this offseason, the number one thing that Jordan Love needs to do, he should be taking 100 throws of the seam route to Luke Musgrave. I watched this and I called it out in preseason. He has not been able to consistently hit this route, and literally every single time they run it, the play is open. And I mean, not open for 5, 10, 15 yards or more. this route is consistently open. He cannot seem to hit this route for the tight end. He needs to improve on that as one key thing that I saw. But if I'm Green Bay, I walk away from this game as the front office saying, you know what? We are in a great position. As the players and coach, I feel I let one slip away. But as the front office, I can move forward now knowing that I don't have to worry about a quarterback. I can focus in on the other parts because this is the youngest team on defense and offense, and everybody has a small contract with the exception of Jordan Love, who I think they'll probably re-sign this year because they did front load his fifth year contract into this year, flex it into this year. So I think we should be looking at him getting one of the bigger contracts, one of the next quarterbacks to get a big contract.
Alex, you identified the struggles that he's had with that seam route early on. I got to give you a tip of the cap there. The thing about this offense, because LaFleur, as we know, runs a very similar offense to Shanahan, Brock Purdy hits that route in his sleep. And that's probably one of the biggest differences between these guys is that is a key route concept in this style of offense, especially for the tight ends. We see Kittle run that route a lot. Purdy is deadly on that route, and Love really needs to catch up and find a way to dial that in because I think it is missing from this offense. But you're right. The Packer team, they have a bright future, man. And LaFleur, by the way, I mean, he out-coached Shanahan in this game. He really did. The 49ers, I think overall talent, I think just showed up over the course of this game. Gets them the win. That final drive by Purdy was awesome. I mean, it really was. Kittle drops a huge would-be first down. They're at third and long, and Purdy just throws an absolute dime to Brandon Ayuk. Awesome throw in a big moment. Made another really nice pass to the sideline. It was a clutch drive, like you said, Alex, on a big stage. And kind of similar to the Browns game early in the year, wet conditions. Purdy didn't have his A game. You can tell he's a guy that maybe isn't as comfortable in wet conditions as some quarterbacks. But in that Browns game, he led them on a final drive to set up a game-winning field goal, and the rookie kicker just missed it. This time they punch it in and get the big win. Going to be fun to see them next week. Obviously, we'll dive into those games next week. Alex, Ravens absolutely flex versus the Houston Texans. This was a bully taking a kid's lunch money right here, Alex. Texans had 11 penalties, never got comfortable in this game. Only 10 first downs for the Texans. CJ Stroud in the offense only had 22 minutes time of possession. This was a dominant game by the Baltimore Ravens. DeMeco Ryans, I got to give him credit. I mean, he did a great job coming up with the game plan, was able to keep it close at half. But Baltimore, with just more talent, more experience, they just flipped the switch in the second half. Not a single snap in the red zone for this Texans team. I thought Todd Monken called an almost flawless game. He was really dialing it up against a good young Texans defense. And on the Ravens side of things, that defense, man, they didn't give up a touchdown in this entire game. They only gave up 3 points in this entire game. They shut out the Texans in the second half.
I think one thing that I saw, I'll start with the Texans first. One thing that I saw and I was looking for was that Houston, I think they really needed to have some type of running game. Trust me, I know Baltimore's tough. This is not about they could have run on them. It's just that run game was non-existent. But then again, Baltimore did get up on them later on, but this game was relatively close going into the fourth quarter. It was still 17-10 going into the fourth quarter. But I think one of the things I noticed and a little bit of criticism I have for Bob Slowick, the Houston OC, is that in the Baltimore game, they were able to give CJ Stroud a lot of times, and there were a lot of 5 and 7 step drops in that game and them going down the field. In this game, a more disciplined and more veteran Baltimore Ravens team, we needed to shorten some of those routes. This needed to really key in on Dalton Schultz and the running back and Devin Singletary out of the backfield, because that's literally what Lamar did a lot of. There was not a lot of things going downfield. This was a lot of short passes to Zay Flowers, to Odell Beckham really had one target, just one target the whole time. Lamar Jackson took his time, did not take any type of chances whatsoever. And we saw old Lamar here. I think there were a lot of dump downs here. I think we saw the old style Ravens football in terms of utilizing the running back and then short passes all around and letting the defense do what they do and smother the Texans. And they just took what was given to them. Great pass, or rather I would say great adjustment by Isaiah Likely on a pass to him in the end zone down the seam where he was able to take it off the top, basically moss the defender. They will be getting Mark Andrews back, so it'll be interesting to see how they start to use him, if we're going to see a lot more 12 personnel with two tight ends on the field, and see what they do going against Kansas City, because we know that's going to be a great matchup. But I think Lamar has, you know, I don't want to just say Lamar. I want to say Lamar and the Ravens have silenced a lot of critics with their decision-making on sticking with Lamar, on their decision-making and going and drafting Zay Flowers, getting Odell Beckham, because now they find themselves in the AFC Championship game one step away from going to the Super Bowl, which is what their ultimate goal was, is what you do when you say you believe in a quarterback. And you go, you believe in a quarterback, and you go and you sign him to the deal that you did. He's leading you to where you thought he would when you drafted him 6 years ago. So things are looking bright for Houston. I know it was a terrible loss, but again, if you're sitting in that Houston front office, you feel really good and saying, I really need to do some more work on my offensive line. I need to do some more work in my rushing room. My receivers look set, and then defensively, maybe need to pull up and get some more linebackers and beef up some more on that defensive line. But I think Houston looks great. Baltimore is where exactly they thought they should and where they currently are, and have their eyes taking that next step to get to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up that Isaiah Likely play, because, man, that guy's been an absolute stud for them. Mark Andrews might be back, which is just scary, but Likely has filled in and been such a good player at the tight end position for them. And if you watch early in that game, there was a play where Lamar tried to really throw a laser into coverage to try to squeeze one into Likely. It got broken up in the red zone. Right after that happened, you saw Likely look at Lamar and point up and say, throw it up, throw it up. He was telling him, like, look, go over the top on this guy. So they make the adjustment. He goes and puts it up where only Likely can get it. And like you said, he got mossed, makes a great play. So great adjustment there by Lamar and Likely, in-game adjustment, if you will. This defense is so impressive, though, man. They're so fast. They're so physical at all three levels. The Roquan Smith trade has been massive. I mean, they are so good with him and Patrick Queen at linebacker. They can just fly around and make plays. Kyle Hamilton might be the best safety in the game. I mean, this guy was making plays all over the field. I like what you said about the Texans, because, yes, they have some holes to fill, but what a great first year for this young coach and quarterback. I don't think anybody expected them to be in the divisional round of the playoffs in year one. So, yes, the Packer game was a lot closer, but in a similar way, I kind of feel the same way about the Texans, thinking, you know what? Great year for these guys, and the future is definitely bright for this team. I think another big draft class, they have a ton of cap space. So if they can hit on a draft class, maybe pick up some free agents to kind of fill some of those holes. Ravens, I think they should be the Super Bowl favorite. I mean, this team looks so good. They have been dominant all year long. They have beat up a lot of really good teams, and they continue to dominate here in the playoffs. Underdog Fantasy is the easiest place to play fantasy sports. I personally love the Pick'em game. Just pick between 2 and 5 players to build a Pick'em entry. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. You can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Download the Underdog Fantasy app and sign up today with promo code PGF. That's promo code PGF to get your first deposit doubled up to $100. The official ticketing app of Pintglass Football is now SeatGeek. I can't recommend them enough, guys. I've been using SeatGeek for years. You want to go to a game this season? SeatGeek is here to take the confusion out of buying tickets, making sure you get the best seats at the best prices. With SeatGeek, you'll never have to worry about overpaying for tickets again. How? They put a 0 to 10 score on each ticket, so you know you're getting a good deal. But here's the real game changer. You can get $20 off your first ticket purchase with the code PGFPOD. That's right, $20 off with code PGFPOD. This season, make every game day epic with SeatGeek. Download the SeatGeek app and remember to enter the code PGFPOD to grab your $20 discount. You know what's important when you're having a good time? Staying hydrated. And that's where Liquid IV comes in, the category-winning hydration brand that's fueling your well-being. With just one stick of Liquid IV, you get 2 times faster hydration than water alone, plus 5 essential vitamins to keep you feeling your best. And let's not forget about the convenience factor. The packaging is perfect for on the go, whether you're tailgating or just hanging out on the couch. But what really sets Liquid IV apart is the amazing flavors. Personally, I'm all about the Concord Grape and Lemon Lime. And with 3 times the electrolytes of traditional sports drinks, Liquid IV is made with premium ingredients to give you the hydration and nourishment you need. Get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code PGFP at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code PGFP at liquidiv.com. Zencastr is the ultimate web-based podcasting solution. It provides high-quality audio and video podcast production and hosting. With a full suite of professional tools, podcasters can seamlessly record, produce, and publish studio-quality content all from one dashboard. Zencastr's post-production process takes the headache out of audio production. Set the right podcast loudness and levels while reducing background noise with a click of a button. Coordinating all your guests to record in person is painful and tedious. Easily invite up to 11 participants per recording with one click. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use my code PGFP and you'll get 30% off your first 3 months of Zencastr Professional. I want you to have the same easy experiences I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. Alex, Detroit pulls away from Tampa Bay. Detroit's offense really came to life in the second half. Huge game from Jahmyr Gibbs, and the Lions' defense came up with 2 big turnovers, including that game-sealing pick by Derek Barnes. Jared Goff was just really efficient in this game. I mean, didn't make a lot of wow throws, but he made the plays that were there. Got away with 1 bad throw early that could have been picked off. But when I'm watching and he's sitting mostly in a clean pocket, he's going to pick you apart. But with that offensive line, I mean, they've been the difference this entire season. They are so good. They lean on teams. They open up big holes for these running backs. Hats off to Tampa Bay, another team that I don't think a lot of people expected to be here. And they were able to actually keep this a lot closer than a lot of people thought. I got to give them some credit. This was a nice game plan by Todd Bowles and that Tampa Bay team. It was a competitive ball game. I thought they showed a lot of grit to make this a competitive game, especially in a really tough road environment. But a big-time win for the Detroit Lions.
Yeah, big-time win. I mean, this is a run that they needed. I mean, you know, I hate to get ahead of ourselves for a moment, but, you know, currently right now, Ben Johnson is probably not going to be there next year. He's interviewing a lot. He's a leader in the clubhouse in a couple of spots. He's probably going to have his pick of the litter in terms of where he wants to go. But this is showing, you know, in terms of what he's doing and getting Detroit here. I mean, what are we talking? I believe it's 30 years? I'll say this about Tampa Bay. I thought Baker Mayfield and a lot of things, he showed a lot of grit, very calm, bad interception at the end of the game. You can't make that type of throw, but I mean, I guess you're trying to make a play. So it comes with the, you know, it happens when you're pressing and, you know, the game is on the line. This is what separates the good from the great and the great from the elite. When you get into those situations and they make those type of plays, just in terms of talking about if I'm the front office of the Buccaneers, I am riding high. I am saying, you know, Baker Mayfield is what, 26, 27, I believe. I have a franchise quarterback that I feel comfortable giving 4 years, $125 million, or whatever that amount is going to be that he's going to command, you know, to stay there. We know that there may be parting waves with Mike Evans, but with what they have done what they have collected on defense, and you know, their defensive drafting has been really, really good. That defense is homegrown, home built of players that they drafted and a few players sprinkled in that they brought in. So that defense is set. You have your, you know, solid bunch of wide receivers. Russell Gage comes back. You do need to do something about that rushing room, but given what we saw, because this game looked over, you know, it didn't look good. And then Tampa Bay came roaring back. Excuse me, not roaring back, no pun intended, Lions fans, but Tampa Bay stayed and they fought and they showed a lot of grit. I'm very happy for Baker Mayfield. I'm very happy for Todd Bowles. On the Detroit side of things, again, I was not a believer in Detroit. I had been picking against them basically all season long since I had picked Green Bay, or rather since we picked Green Bay to win the division. But again, Dan Campbell really silencing me and any other critics out there. I mean, there's nothing you can say but just have respect for what they have done. I am still a little bit critical in terms of the amount of times they run. I just feel that, you know, throwing the ball 43 times with Jared Goff and then what you have with that rushing game and those two guys in that offensive line, I think they should be doing a lot more. I'll get into more of that on when we start talking, when we start breaking down championship week. But Amon St. Brown, this guy, to miss the Pro Bowl, this guy is a dude. I know Snoop Dogg loves to say a lot of guys. I believe he's another one of the guys that came out of his camp as well. But this guy is a dude. This is a grown man receiver. And I think he's perhaps maybe a little bit overlooked because he plays in a division with Justin Jefferson. But this is a dude out here. When he walks onto the field, he's making plays. You know what, Brad? I think all of these teams that we talked about, specifically the young ones, Tampa Bay, we talked about Houston, they're in Green Bay. I think if you're the front office, this is going, you have to be excited going into next year, and you're excited going into the offseason when you're going to have to put in the real work because you just saw what your teams were capable of when you didn't expect anything. So now going forward, all you guys, this is the NFL. It's easy to go from worst to first. We just watched Houston do it. Dig in. Believe in your team, believe in your coaches, believe in whoever you put on the field, and you can be in a lot of these spaces within a season. But I'm so excited to what we're about to see going forward into championship week.
Yeah, Alex, it's well put. And Amon-Ra St. Brown, I'm going to take a victory lap on this one, Alex, because when he came out of the draft, he was one of my favorite fourth round picks. And I talked about how he could be one of the biggest steals in the draft, coming out of USC. I loved this kid's skill set. I thought he was a big-time sleeper pick. But yeah, what a player he is, man, and just a dog. I mean, a guy that just has a physical toughness. He almost has like a defensive mindset for a guy that plays offense, just that tough, gritty, go-get-it type of player. I really like watching him play. I also highlighted Aiden Hutchinson last week as a guy to watch in this game. He was great. Four tackles, a tackle for a loss, a sack. That front four is really helping that secondary in recent weeks. We know the secondary is kind of the weak spot for this Lions team, but when Aiden Hutchinson and those guys can get pressure on the quarterback, it can certainly help out a weak secondary. We saw that in this game. Now, Baker had a lot of yards and made some good throws. I don't want to make it seem like they completely shut him down. I mean, he had two picks that we talked about, really hurt in this game for sure, but he made some great throws in this game too. The turnaround for this Lions team, though, has been impressive. When you look at where this team was just a couple years ago, this shows you why the NFL draft is so important, because they hit on a lot of guys in the last two or three years, and this team's pretty good. Thursday, we're going to drop our AFC and NFC Championship preview episode, have betting picks and predictions for that one. It's going to be a lot of fun to break down those games. But if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Once again, I'm Brad Fowler. He's Alex Higdon. This is Pint Glass Football, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Pint Glass Football Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow us on Twitter at PGF Podcast.